Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
And welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's episode, I'm talking to director and animator Eric Power about his second animated feature, the 80s horror-inspired paper-cut animation film Attack of the Demons. Over the course of the interview, I talked to Eric about the long and arduous paper-cut animation process, the films he drew inspiration from, and the inevitable comparisons the film has drawn to South Park, even down to, as it turns out, entirely coincidental Colorado setting. Eric also tells me about the potential sequel to Attack of the Demons, his reaction to the positive reception the film has received from various film festivals, and the projects he is working on next. Before we get to the interview, though, I just want to quickly remind you that the best way you can support New Horror Express is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. But now, on to the interview with Eric. Hi, Eric. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me, Scott.
It's okay. So we've got you on the show today to talk about Attack of the Demons.
Yes.
For the listeners at home, can you give a brief synopsis of what Attack of the Demons is about?
Sure. So the film is an animated horror and taking place kind of in the early 90s, where this kind of secluded Colorado town all of a sudden gets kind of bombarded by this mutating demon horde, and it's kind of up to a small group of friends to figure out what's going on and hopefully stop it before the apocalypse.
And what was the, where did the first initial idea for this film come about?
Well, I guess back in 2011, I was kicking around ideas for a feature. I decided that I had done enough short films and music videos that I kind of wanted to tell a bigger story. And so one of the first ideas I had was Attack the Demons. But back then, the idea was kind of basic. I knew that I wanted a secluded town to just have to deal with this horrible demon invasion, but I didn't know the details about it. And at the time, I thought that it might have been too hard of a film to make, because I was just kind of learning the craft. Like, the whole thing's done in a paper stop motion, because that's my chosen medium. And it's a difficult one to do and wrap your head around. Like, I didn't know how I was going to make a giant city or a lot of the stuff. And so I decided to go in a different direction, and I made a samurai film instead, thinking that it would be less involved. So I sort of shelved Attack of the Demons and made my first feature, Path of Blood. And years later, I met a screenwriter named Andreas Peterson, and I kind of told him my idea. And he took the initial concept and expanded it into what we know now of the story. So definitely, it was just sort of a very loose concept that he expanded and took to some pretty cool places. And that was 2015, I think, is when we were writing that together. He did most of the writing. I just sort of like chimed in like, yes, and this too.
So did he do most of the actual screenplay? Like, did you just, what were the kind of, what was your input? What was your role in the writing process?
Yeah, so I told him my initial idea. So I knew that I wanted to have three friends that each sort of represent a different part of like popular culture, maybe. Like, one of them loves video games, films, and then music. And he took that and kind of expanded on it. He brought in a bunch of we knew we wanted it to be kind of giallo inspired, films like Demons, like obviously, yeah. And that we just sort of talked influences, and he kind of expanded it from there and sent me over an outline, and then I think I had like just a couple notes, but it was sort of the kind of thing to where we were on the same page basically from the get-go. I had read one of his scripts for another horror film he wrote, and it just sort of gelled with my sensibilities. So I was just like, yes, this is perfect. I think just like a few minor things I might have had input in. I can't even remember exactly what those were, but it was almost like he had gotten inside my brain and just did it or something. It was very weird reading the script. I felt like it was perfect.
I was wondering in terms of the dialogue, because I don't think it's a spoiler, I don't think it's a spoiler to talk about it. There's a central kind of scene quite early on in the movie where the central three characters are debating the merits of music versus film versus video games. Was that just Andreas like wrote that, or was that like based on like a kind of conversation stroke debate that you guys had?
No, I think he wrote it. I think just what we were sort of going for was identifying with kind of like the misfits who have their like chosen like identity. Like I know that when I was growing up, I loved horror films and kind of some underground music, and it was the same for Andreas. You know, he grew up like watching VHS copies of old films, but still sort of feeling like a bit like an outsider, especially back in like the 90s, you know, before the internet was a big thing. Everybody just sort of had their small group of friends who like really dug something. And so I think that's what we wanted to kind of show with those three characters, is that they kind of like their thing that they are in love with and kind of are sort of like maybe alone in their love for it, or they feel like they are. So I don't know. I really like that conversation that he wrote, but we didn't specifically talk about that particular moment in the film. He just sort of came up with it.
And was that part of the reason why you said it in the 90s, or was it just to give it that kind of retro feel to tie into some of the references that are being made throughout the film?
I think I wanted to set it in the 90s just to give it a vibe, I guess, and to sort of get away from some of the things you might have had to write in had it been set now. Like, you know, I wanted the town to be secluded. I didn't want there to be like a cell phone conversation or anything like that, just to sort of keep it simple. And also, I think I just have a lot of a love for that time period. I've liked going to the arcades, and I knew I wanted, you know, gaming to sort of be involved somehow. And I guess it's a weird way that I've thought about this film. Like, to me, it is a Red Vines and popcorn and soda kind of film. Like, people should watch it, and it like looks the way Red Vines smell. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's just like a feeling that I wanted people to have.
I'm not sure what Red Vines are.
It's like a Twizzler. It's like a candy, movie candy. It's a weird way to think about the film, but I don't know.
I think I get what you're angling at, though. Like, I think like there's a certain nostalgia to it. That like I kind of get the vibe, even though I might not entirely get the reference. I get the vibe you're going for. I think.
Yeah, it's like a simpler time. You know, and so, and just sort of a nice, easygoing story where you get to just sort of live in it a little bit. I don't know.
I was going to ask as well, because I was thinking that there's a bunch of references in the films that are quite 80s, and I was wondering if you'd avoided setting it in the 80s in case you thought that the 80s were kind of oversaturated at this moment.
Oh, you know, I guess I sort of thought that it was always just a conscious decision to be set sort of like 1994. I think it's just because when I was that age when I sort of got interested in all this media, you know, so like I said, I was going to arcades. I was like looking for these films. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's easier to envision what you already know. And I guess I just felt that the 90s were kind of representative of my coming of age. So it made sense to recreate that a little bit.
And in terms of the influences, what were, I mean, like, there's certain ones like Demons and The Thing that kind of jump off the page, but what were the kind of influences you were drawing from?
Major one of my big ones, I really love The Blob 88. Have you seen the remake of The Blob?
Yeah, yes, that's a great remake.
So that film kind of struck a chord with me, because in it, you know, there's all these characters and terrible things are happening to them, but you actually really like a lot of the characters, and it kind of hits you like unexpectedly when some of them die like early on. So I kind of wanted the film to have that feel to where, you know, you like the people that are in trouble, and this is, they're earnest and they're trying their best, and you know, nothing's just like phoned in. Like, I guess I did have a kind of like the asshole boyfriend character, you know, that sort of gets his comeuppance, but for the most part, I just wanted it to feel like you really enjoy these characters and want to spend time with them rather than just
watch. Particularly the asshole boyfriend chat. I thought that was particularly amusing. I think it's partly because I am also, I do album reviews as well as touring this. So I was like, that very much skewers a certain type of music critic. You know,
all right,
I can think of from certain kind of hipster sites.
Right, like some sort of Pitchfork.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna say Pitchfork. I was like, am I gonna get in trouble from Pitchfork if I say Pitchfork? Because I'm thinking Pitchfork. I'm sure they're not listening, and I'm sure they're not planning to hire me anyway. So it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, I actually had to play the character of Chet myself.
I saw that.
And a hard to play an asshole. I got to talk down to somebody, or I don't know. It was challenging.
Did you read some Pitchfork reviews to get you into the role?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Obviously, you mentioned the type of animation that the film's done with, right? How long was that process? Once you had the script, like, how long did it take to animate? Because it seems like a painfully slow process. You must be a more patient man than I.
Yeah, so I guess animation, we had a very limited time frame to make the film just because of our funding. It was really small. I animated the entire thing in about, I guess, 9 months, and then we spent the rest of the time, 3 months, kind of I was compositing and editing, and I guess I did have some reshoots towards the end of various things, but it was definitely a marathon to animate it. I set some pretty high quotas for myself for every month. But my history with animation, so I'm a freelance animation director. I do a lot of music videos and, you know, commercial stuff. And so I've kind of learned how to work as fast as possible and as efficiently as possible, just in order to survive, because it's my main source of income. So yeah, just animate like freaking crazy. And tried like hell not to cut any corners. We were originally kind of hoping for an 18-month production timeline, so that would give me more time to make the set pieces larger and all that, more detail, but we had to crunch it down. But I still feel pretty happy with you know, what we were able to do in that time frame.
And was there, during that animation process, was there any major setbacks? Or it seems like it was, you know, intense, like it was a hell of a lot of animation, quite a short amount of time, but was there any kind of moments of, like, it seemed like derailed or anything?
I managed to stay on top of it the entire time. I'm pretty good at setting deadlines and meeting them, so I don't feel like I was all that stressed out. I guess the one thing I was a little bit stressed out about was the voice acting, because I needed to have the voices recorded before I shot the characters so that I could animate to the performance. And are like, we did the acting ourselves. Like my screenwriter Andreas, he plays like five characters in the film. It's ridiculous. And you know, his family members played other characters, and we're stretched out across the US, so we were like sending the Zoom mic that we were using to record like to each other, like shipping it to each other for lines, like sending it across the country. And then the lines wouldn't turn out too well, so we'd have to re-record later. And so sometimes I was waiting on lines, like I gotta animate this by the end of the week, but you know, somebody's schedule doesn't make it easy to do that. And so some of that was very stressful. I'd say the voice acting was probably the most stressful part of the whole process for me. That, even at the end, we had to like redub a lot of stuff, which ended up being a little challenging too. So, yeah, I guess I'd do things differently. If we had the budget, we would have liked to kind of have everybody in the same room and just do it right. But unfortunately, we just didn't have the option.
Having already done one feature in this style, was the with Path of Blood, was it as difficult or was it easier on this one, having already done it?
Oh man, it was so much easier. Path of Blood was an absolute trial by fire. I learned so many new techniques on it, where by the time I was done, I felt pretty comfortable in the medium. So with the Attack of the Demons, I was able to kind of expand on everything I already knew and shoot it with like full confidence. So, and now, I mean, my next film I can shoot with even more confidence because I learned a lot during Attack of the Demons. But I wouldn't say that I was all that intimidated. I just sort of went for it. And
You certainly seem to like to stretch yourself. I mean, in terms of like setting a high bar. I mean, like, I know that Path of Blood is actually in Japanese. You had it right Translated into Japanese, which seems like a step, you know, like a step beyond, you know, what the most people would have done.
Yeah, I love samurai films. I grew up kind of watching them. I think that's the type of stuff that really got me into sort of genre filmmaking to begin with, like watching Kurosawa's Ron, Zatoichi films. They had like a pretty big influence on me, and I knew that if I was going to make a samurai film, that I'd want it to be in like the native tongue, you know. It just made sense to me. And luckily my composer's wife speaks Japanese, and she translated the script for me, and she also knew of a couple people to bring in for potential voice acting roles as well. So it seemed like a no-brainer. Like, I wasn't going to make that film in English, like, ever. It was never the intention. She had some challenges with it because the film's set, like, in the early Edo period. And she said translating from English to Japanese was kind of odd because it isn't the Japanese that would be spoken now. It's sort of like translating, she said, like, modern English into sort of Shakespeare because they would talk a certain way back then.
Yeah, right.
So, it was challenging on that part. And then the translation wasn't always exactly what the script had said, because that's just not the way people talked. And so we translated the script to Japanese and then the Japanese back to English. And so it just sort of changed along the way. But it was an interesting process. Yeah, it was also really fun.
You mentioned your composer there, John Dixon.
Yeah.
I was wondering as well, like, his, you know, between the animation and the his music as well gives like that certain kind of nostalgic feel to the movie. It brings it to the package. Did you always have it in your mind that he was going to compose on this movie as well as your last one,
Path of Blood? Absolutely. I mean, he knocked it out of the park for Path of Blood, and it was never a question. I hope to use John for like all my films. I think he's brilliant. And I try to give him like very little notes as well in this film and the other, and just sort of let him do his thing because he's an artist. And I think the only thing I told him on Attack of the Demons was that I wanted to have a lot of like crazy guitar in there. I didn't want it to be like all synth driven. I wanted to have some sort of give a little punk rock edge, I think. He definitely delivered.
Yeah, that was kind of a little bit of a surprise, I would say. Because I think, you know, the initial setup and how it felt and stuff, I was thought, you know, like, oh, I can see where this is going. It's going to have like a kind of Carpenter-esque kind of soundtrack, but it didn't entirely. It has smatterings of that, but it doesn't entirely have that. And like you say, it's got that kind of punk rock element as well.
Yeah, his guitar stuff on there was great. Like, he had sent me some demos, and it had a lot of synth stuff in it, and it sounds really great. But I think the synth thing had been done like quite a bit. Like, Stranger Things had come out, and I mean, our film was written like before Stranger Things. We're like, oh shoot, are people gonna like just think that we're copying because we've got like kids on bikes and, you know, like synthy sort of score? But we were also very inspired by films like Demons, you know, and so we knew we wanted to have like more of like a 70s kind of weird grungy kind of thing to bring to the table too. And I think John just sort of like knew what to do because I love the soundtrack to Attack of the Demons. It's actually going to come out on vinyl. So it's exciting. Cool. Yeah.
I feel this question is inevitable. Are you sick of hearing comparisons to South Park just because of the animation style?
Yeah, you have no idea. It's it's one of the worst things because I'm not that vibe, you know? Like, I don't even watch South Park. So it's a little painful because I think people think of cut paper animation as sort of crude. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, the style of South Park, even though it's not actual cut paper, it's done in a very kind of crude manner. It's actually like all digital. But and also another thing like that hit
me.
Yeah,
I think they just did the, like, I'm sure I read that they just did the, like, the pilot episode in like cut paper animation,
yeah,
and like gave up on it after that was it's like digital.
Yeah, like, that's too time consuming, let's do digital. Probably the right call for them. But yeah, I mean, I guess I watched it back when I was 17, but I don't really watch South Park. And then another thing, like, reviews started coming into the film and they're like, and the film is set in Colorado, that can't be a coincidence. And I was like, I can't believe I didn't think about that, because it's totally a coincidence. I didn't even think about that. That's how kind of far off South Park was on my radar. Colorado was just because I wanted to isolate the town like in a valley that only had like one entrance. That was like the core reason. Plus, I wanted to animate like mountains because I like the mountains. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be inevitable. It's going to follow me forever, I think. But I've kind of come to peace with it. I think eventually people know that I'm not like trying to do that. Also, I think it might spoil some expectations, because if people are sort of expecting South Park, they might expect me to go places that I didn't really want to go.
I was going to ask that, like, because every review mentions South Park, and that's like the constant comparison. And I'm sure, like, when a lot of people see that trailer and see that animation style and see it set in Colorado, they might set up that expectation in their head.
Yeah.
And so they might expect it to be cruder than it is. And they might expect it to be like kind of gorier and nastier than it is. And for all the kind of gore, there is a real warmth and heart to the movie that, you know, you might be wrong-footed by if you're expecting something like a horror South Park.
Yeah, but I mean, I just have to trust the audience, and like the people that watch it and dig the vibe, like, they get it. And I mean, all we can do is make the film that we wanted to make, and we definitely wanted to make a very unironic, just kind of a film with heart that, you know, characters you like. And I don't know, I just wanted it to feel warm and inviting and likable. There's a lot of gore in there. I mean, heads are exploding and stuff like that, but it was very important that it felt like a real film, like a kind of a, like a live action film, you know. And maybe that was one of my pitfalls in making it, is that I kind of wanted it to feel as live action as possible. So I'm kind of excited in the future to sort of push the animation aspect a little more in my work, to be like, okay, now I'm going to make you guys a cartoon, like something that I can only do with a cartoon. Yeah, it's something to consider.
You seem to take great care in like really setting up the characters. Like, it gets to the mayhem and the mayhem's good, but it's not a film that just is just about that. Like, they make the characters, the central three, Natalie, Kevin and Jeff, like, real characters, and it's quite melancholic to start with, really.
Yeah, definitely.
I suppose my question there was like that was plan to make those characters feel real. Avoiding the kind of cliche of just the kind of horror, just kind of throwaway horror character.
Yeah, we didn't want it to be that film at all. Like, we could have made sort of like an over the top film where everyone's just kind of mean to each other and dying in bad ways, and lots of like potty humor and stuff like that. But that wasn't what we wanted to make. Kind of just wanted you to actually care about these people, you know, and maybe forget that it's animated at all, you know. Man, you should read some of the scripts that Andreas has, like, for some real serious horror. Like, this was our fun movie, but he's got some that we hit some pretty dark emotional places, and I'm still planning on having them animated. But that was one thing. Like, I wasn't sure after watching the film with the group if people would be able to take these paper characters seriously, you know. So it was a kind of an interesting test to see. But it seems, so far, it seems like people have responded. Like, they feel like the characters are three-dimensional and real enough to care about. It's heartening.
It does feel like, I think you quite quickly get over the kind of animation style of, like, you know, these are our paper, you know, these feel real enough that it's, yeah, I don't think that's like a big hump for people to get over. Or it wasn't for me when I was...
Thank you.
I was going to ask, back to kind of influences, I was wondering if either you or Andreas had seen the film Father's Day, because the character of Uncle Gus is, I can see the kind of thing, kind of vibe to that character, but he also, humor of it seems quite similar to the character of Ahab in Father's Day, the Astron 6 film. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't. I'll have to ask Andreas about that, because Uncle Rolf, like, I knew that I wanted them to end up in this like crazy survivalist uncle's cabin, you know, for this sort of showdown at the end. But he came up with this character, Uncle Rolf, who I find just completely hilarious and quite an interesting character. But I'm not exactly sure his influence there, like what he was drawing from. It is such a strange character.
There's some, I think that character has some great lines.
I love that. I love him. I'd want to see a whole film with him just like grumpily doing stuff.
It's when he invites them in for food, and then they ask, like, "Didn't you? Where's breakfast? You know, you said you would bring." And then he just says, "I would never say that."
And he's like super sincere. I would never say that. I love that.
That's such a great line.
That was Andreas. Like, he played the character too. He played him really well, I thought.
I was wondering as well, like, how did you first get into this style of animation?
Well, I make a lot of music videos. It's kind of like the bread and butter, you know, of my work. And one of the videos I did, they were looking like, the song felt very kind of folky to me, and I thought like a kind of folk art aesthetic would work, and so I decided to try paper, just like a very, very simple kind of style, feeling like it would feel that way. And it did pretty well. People liked it. And then I started getting requests for the style. And eventually, like, I was doing a bunch of digital animation too and claymations, but people kept kind of being drawn to the paper stuff I was working on. And I got better at it. And as I got better, I realized that I could do more with it than I thought I could. Like, I thought that I could only use it for very simple stuff, but you know, some new techniques I learned, specifically when working on Path of Blood, I really felt like I was opening up something and in the craft that just kind of like blew the top off of anything I thought I could do before. And I really very much enjoy the hands-on aspect of the physical paper. It's just fun to just sort of be crafting. And the way my brain works, I think it works best with paper, because I'm not really all that great at drawing. I love, you know, traditional hand-drawn animation, and if I was good at it, I think that's probably what I would be doing. But the way you layer the paper to create the characters, it just sort of works with the way I creatively, I don't know, just create, I guess. So Yeah, I just sort of fell in love with it. And it's actually one of the very first styles of animation too. So it's kind of neat to kind of carry on that tradition that started like over 100 years ago. Pretty cool.
And would you say now that you've kind of walked on to this style, would you say that this is going to be your style going forward?
I wouldn't say that if I will always forever work with paper, because I kind of want to do some other stuff too, maybe even some live action. But for the next couple of films, for sure. But I think I've taken it to another level, even outside of Attack of the Demons. I've started incorporating a ton of watercolors and interesting textures. So the next work you see is going to be 100 times more detailed. I'm really, really excited about it. There's something about bringing in this other materials that is kind of expanding things like by leaps and bounds. It'd be like past Attack of the Demons level improvement, but maybe times two. I think it's going to be ridiculous. So I'm excited to show the world what I can do, but we got to get funding first.
Now, there is latitude. There is latitude for a sequel to Attack of the Demons.
Well, Andreas already wrote it.
I didn't know if you'd want to talk about that or not, but it's something in the pipe work then.
Oh yeah, he wrote it. Like, he sort of surprised me with it about maybe 2 years ago. I think we were still working on the film itself, and he's like, by the way, I wrote the sequel. I read it, and it's amazing. It's like it's set like 15 years later. It's very much post-apocalyptic, like the demons have won, and it's a very different film. It's really interesting. It's kind of romantic in a way. I don't know what I can compare it to. I guess it's kind of like Mad Maxian, but with this kind of strange friendship romance thing between the characters. It goes to some really interesting places, but I'm not sure if we're gonna make that film. I guess it just depends. It's not what people would expect in a sequel.
So it's not necessarily the film that you're going to be working on next.
Oh, no, it's not. I'm not even sure if it's going to be like the film after that, because we've got a couple projects that we want to get made. But it's definitely a thing that exists.
So it could be quite some time before we see that.
Yeah, I would say so, for sure. Yeah, I've got some other things I have to make first.
Would you like to talk about any of those other things? Can you tell us anything about those other things?
Well, the main one that I'm focusing on right now, it's a kind of like, it's not a kid's film and it's not an adult film. It's somewhere in between. It's a story about a kind of young adult who finds herself kind of, she gets lost in this forest that I guess, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain because it's a bit of a meditative piece and just about life in general. It has some supernatural elements to it. I know I'm being super vague, but the script is very strange. There's like a talking cat in it, and it's sort of like a meditation on life, like kicking you down and what it takes to rise to the challenge. And it's sort of a film that I want to make for like my daughter when she's in her 20s and when life has like kicked the shit out of her, that she'll watch the film and know that I've been there, and that it's something that everyone has to go through, just like when life just like fucks you up. And that you gotta like kind of rise up and challenge yourself to, I don't know, I guess maybe grow up a little bit or to sort of bravely face hard times. But that's what I want to make next. It's also a very beautiful film.
Can you tell us the title of that film?
It's going to be called When You Get to the Forest. Go and then back. I also have this film with woodland creatures, and it's sort of like a murder mystery, like a bunch of folk art and music in it. So there's a bunch of stuff we're working on. But definitely some scary stuff too coming.
Are they both in the same animation style, or are you going for a different animation style for those ones?
Well, for the forest film, it's going to be sort of this watercolor, sort of mixed media approach. And I guess I'm not sure what the other ones will look like. It depends on, you know, where my art takes me, I guess, in that time. It takes so long to make a feature film animated. So, and I get new ideas all the time. But it's hard to tell like what those films are going to fully look like till I get there. Hopefully good.
Going back to Attack of the Demons, I was wondering what your like festival experiences were like. It premiered at Cinepocalypse last year, and it was at a few festivals in 2019. And I was also wondering how much the pandemic like messed up the festival schedule for you this year.
Yeah, so we didn't really have any plans to continue the festival run in 2020. We premiered at Cinepocalypse last summer, and then we played a couple more fests here and there through the fall. And then I guess we started talking distribution with people, and that sort of led to the fest in Chattanooga, and with the virtual one. So I didn't really know I was going to be a part of that. We didn't submit to it. That's something that the distributors did and worked on, and my sales rep.
How many of the festivals that you did appear at, you know, actual physical festivals that actually happened last year, did you go to, and did you watch the film with many audiences?
I went to Cinepocalypse. That was like the world premiere. That was super exciting. You know, the theater is beautiful, like old theater, you know, the red curtains is gorgeous. And it was amazing seeing it with an audience. I was a complete nervous wreck, as you'd expect, but it was really fun. And then I went down to Houston to Graveyard Fest and saw it again. Since I live in Texas, it was easy to get to. And there's others that play, like in Australia at the Sci-Fi Fest, and then up in Minneapolis, Thriller Chiller. Yeah, Grand Rapids. No, Michigan, sorry. But I wasn't able to go to that one because of costs.
Fair enough. I see they also did play in the UK, Soho Horror Film Fest.
Yes. I wish I could have gone to that too. They were so gracious, but yeah, it was too expensive.
And how pleased with you have you been with the reaction to the film? Because it seems to have been, despite all the South Park comparisons, it seems to be generally warmly received by reviewers, and it seems like generally it's been across the board, you know, well received.
Yeah, it's been very humbling. I mean, we made it just with a lot of passion and very little money, you know, and I think people can tell that it's something that we cared about a lot, put a lot of effort into. And so I've just been really thrilled that people have kind of responded the way they have. I know there's been some, like, some people are like, the voice acting's not so great, you know? I'm like, it's fair. I can take the criticism. I'm just happy that people also, like, can recognize that we actually really cared and tried to make something fun and heartfelt. Yeah, that's all I can say. It's scary to release a film. You're like releasing a piece of your heart into the world, and you're just hoping that, you know, people aren't gonna hate you. So it's nice. Everyone's been so kind.
Was there ever, talking about the voice acting, was there ever a plan to get other voice actors, or was that just like a budgetary thing, or was it always just going to be like Andreas yourself, you know, like those kind of people?
Oh man, I mean, we really wished that we could have brought people on board, but our budget was like $35,000 to make the whole thing, which, I mean, that's kind of crazy. So we just simply did not have the money for voice acting. It is what it is, you know. But I think Andreas like rocked it, and I'm happy for like all the characters. We even had to bring in some like friends and neighbors to do some of the smaller roles, so it gets a little wonky at times, but it also makes me feel good because I know these people and I love them, and you know, I'm happy that they forever get to be a part of my film, you know. So I'm willing to accept, you know, the trade-off of the voice acting.
So are all the voice actors people, you know, like I know that you're there, I know that Andrea's there. I assumed that Thomas Peterson was
yeah,
Andreas' brother. But like
Kevin is like one of my favorite parts. I love the way he read for Kevin. We did hire one person, August Sargenti, who did Stuart, and I was really happy with what he did with that character.
It's a movie that's obviously made, you know, with a lot of love for horror, it's a lot of passion. Are you kind of equally proud of all your designs for the different demons? Or is there any ones that particularly stand out in your head and being like, yeah, that's my favorite. I really love what I did there.
Huh.
In terms of creature design.
I guess and there's one demon. He's like a blue punk rock demon. He was actually the very first one I made, and I kind of like him because he sort of represents, you know, the vibe of the film, just sort of like this punk rock demon character. And I also like the teak monster. Habram like scared the crap out of me. Like, how am I gonna make this guy? When Andreas wrote that, I was kind of like, what? I had no idea he was gonna go that big with it. But I'm pretty happy with how he turned out too. But yeah, I guess the punk rock blue demon and the teak monster are probably my favorites.
Does Habram take a long time to do then? Like, did you have to think about that one a lot?
Yeah, I saved him for the end. Like, I wasn't sure how I was gonna tackle that. It was always during production, it was kind of like this looming thing, you know, that I was intimidated by, which is good because, you know, he's a looming threat in the film as well. So it was kind of fitting that, you know, I'd also sort of be scared in real life of him.
Was that something you were conscious of as well, of like, you know, like as much as this is quite a warm, sweet movie, you know, like for the horror to be there, to be impactful, for the creatures to really stand out and have some real horror to them.
Like, was I scared if I could make it horror?
Yeah, like it would, you know, come off like too comedic or too cheesy or whatever, you know, like trying to find that balance.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was worried like the whole time whether, you know, anyone could even take like a cut paper horror seriously, like. And I knew that, I mean, no one's going to be like scared by this film. I don't think it's going to scare anyone, but I don't think horror films necessarily have to scare all the time. I think just like horrific events that unfold, you know, that's horror. So if people are like, yeah, I watched it, it wasn't scary, I don't think that's like a good condemnation of a horror film. So I was like worried that people wouldn't take it seriously, but also at the same time, like, hey, you know, it's going to be a fun movie. Like, that's the thing, we want to entertain, we want it to be fun. So I feel like pretty good about it.
Yeah, I never understand that, like when people use that as like a bar or like a stick to beat horror films with, well, I didn't find it scary, therefore it is pointless.
Yeah, I was so brave that I watched it and it didn't scare me. Therefore, I'm better than that movie.
Yeah, like I wouldn't. Yeah, that's the line of thinking. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I think some horror films scare you. Some horror films kind of get under your skin. Some horror films just kind of make you think in a different way. It's just like, I don't know, like I think some people have like a very, very narrow idea of what a horror film is and what a horror film is supposed to do.
Yeah, and I'm kind of happy that I've got this like animated horror films don't really get made very often, but it's almost like it could be like a good entry level for like young people to like watch and get interested in horror, you know, because they might not be as intimidated to watch it, but then they might at the end understand like why horrific stories are like fun, you know, and why you might want to seek them out even if they're not scary, you know.
Yeah,
we're doing our part, we're trying.
That does seem to be a thing, like in terms of like entry level horrors. You know, it's been something that's kind of come up on the podcast a couple of times when I've been interviewing people. Like, there seemed to be a time that there was a lot more of that. You know, there was like films like a Gremlins or things like that being made that were like kind of gateway horrors that aren't made as much now.
Yeah, we've got this idea for one that's sort of specifically designed to be that. Like, Attack of the Demons is very gory, you know, and I don't know if it'd ever get an R rating just because it's paper, but we've got some ideas for, like, entry-level horror, like Goonies-esque style adventures. We've got this one about a haunted arcade that is really fun. So, yeah, it would be kind of fun to, like, intentionally try to make a entry-level horror as well.
Do you think there's maybe been a change in sensibility in terms of what people find acceptable? Like, a kind of... Some people I've talked to feel like there's been almost like a kind of watering down. The fact that there was a time where, you know, something like Indiana Jones, the Raiders of the Lost Ark was made, and it's got Nazis having their faces melted off, and that was for kids. And like, now that it seems like now that wouldn't be made for kids in the same way, because like it's like there's a kind of penned off, like, this is for kids, this is for adults, this is for whatever.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's probably, I think people are maybe targeting their films more specifically at demographics now, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of those old blockbusters, like even the Goonies, like I've got three kids of my own, and I'm wondering, like, what age is appropriate to show them all this stuff, you know? Like, I recently showed them The Dark Crystal, and that's a pretty horrifying film, but that's totally, it was an all-ages film back then, you know? Yeah, I don't know. It's a really good question.
Yeah, there's some dark stuff. Like the 80s were just apparently quite weird, you know, when you think about like Dark Crystal, or even to like Labyrinth, or Return to Oz, you know, like some really weird films that were made for kids in the
80s. They even made like RoboCop toys, you know, like for little kids, like, hey, it's RoboCop. When you watch RoboCop, it's so horrific. And then that's interesting.
Yeah, this is somewhat of a tangent, but yeah, there seemed to be a lot of that. Like, I remember there seemed to be a time where they'd make cartoons based off of adult films. Like, when I was a kid, there was a Conan the Barbarian cartoon, and there was also Toxic Crusaders, which was a spin-off from the Toxic Avenger. And I wasn't aware of that stuff at the time, but then I watched the movies like a couple years later, and I was like, you know, and you look back and you're like, what were they thinking of, like, having cartoon, like, kids versions, spin-offs from these things?
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. Now I think the reverse might happen, or you get some very adult spin-offs of like kids stuff. So you might see some like violent films made based on properties that were innocent when we were young. We'll see.
Talking of gateway horrors, what were your gateway horrors?
Gosh, I mean, like all those films we talked about, I consumed Gremlins and all that. I watched Night of the Living Dead when I was way too young, and I think that was a sort of a gateway into all the things that horror can say, you know, like and just like the important narratives that can be had within the genre. And for me, very specifically with animation, I would say it was films like Akira, Ghost in the Shell, a lot of the stuff coming from Japan that inspired me to be interested in animated horror, though, and making it.
And did you always have an idea that you wanted to be an animator? Like, from what age did you think, like, this is what I want to do when I grow up, this is my mission to do this?
I knew I wanted to make films, but I was thinking I would make live action films, and I just sort of started animating like on the side. And my idea was that I was gonna use my animation skills to kind of up the production value of my live action films, just sort of like, I can do my own special effects through animation, you know, stuff like that. But then I started realizing that the things that I enjoyed the most were the animations. And also, it was just very cost-effective to make animation as opposed to, like, hiring a bunch of actors. And I remember I was trying to make, like, films with my friends, and nobody really seemed to be as passionate about it as I was. So I was, like, always trying to beg them to act in my stuff. And then I realized that my animation characters, they weren't begging. I didn't have to beg them because I could make them do it. So it's like I get to force my actors to act, and I think that was very eye-opening, and you realize that animation is something I could feasibly use to tell my stories, and it just went from there.
And it was always the dream, you know, to very much make your own films, not like work on other people's films as an animator.
Yeah, definitely. That's always been the goal.
And how did you first get into it? I know quite early on that you worked on Richard Linklater's Waking Life. Was that one of your first jobs? Or
yeah, that was my first animation job. I was 17 at the time, and the guy that wrote the program, the rotoscope program for Waking Life, Bob Sabiston, is a friend of the family. My brother, he made a film about my brother who's autistic called Snack and Drink, and that short film directly led to Waking Life. And so when he started making it with Linkletter, he gave me a little kind of animation part, because I was very interested in art and I was already doing some kind of early animation myself, like out of high school. And so, yeah, I got that big break. And after working with all these amazing artists, just for a little bit, I didn't really do very much on the film, some like in-between stuff, you know, I was young, they were much better than me, but I was very inspired by just the environment and working around them. So when I went home, I became a little bit more serious about animation, excited about it.
Was that at all because they were more experienced and because it was a Linklater film? Was that intimidating at the time, being so young, or were you not really thinking about that?
I was very intimidated. I kind of felt a little out of place because all these people were so much better artists than I was. but they were so kind, and you know, I became friends with some of them, and they're very welcoming. But yeah, I mean, I was definitely intimidated, but I was just trying to do my best and do right by everyone.
So it sounds like, as well as the two projects that you're most directly working on, that there is a whole heap that's going to come out from you. There's a lot of projects seem to be simmering away from hearing you talk throughout the interview.
Oh, yeah. I mean, me and Andreas have probably about 6 to 8 films like already written that we want to work on. And it's just a matter of which ones we can get funded and how fast I can make them. Like we work on such small budgets. Like if someone was like $1 million, we'd probably be able to make like 5 films for the next 10 years. Yeah, but we don't have any funding right now, so we're just sort of like dying.
Are most of Andreas's scripts that you do go to ones that are like horror ones?
Well, yeah, I mean, we got like horror, we got kids films, we got like all sorts of stuff like ready to go.
So do you think like going forward, that's going to be like your kind of real partnership, cinematic partnership? It seems like you've really struck a bond there between you know, as director and writer and animator.
Yeah, I mean, we're practically family. But I don't know, something about us working together, it works really well. I think he understands what I can do. He writes stuff with my stuff in mind, and we've just gelled like from the get-go. It's interesting because we never met in person until the premiere of Attack of the Demons. That was the very first time we ever like met in person, so that was very interesting. So this is definitely a partnership of the 21st century.
Had it all just been online conversations up to that point then?
Yeah, we got introduced to each other by a mutual friend, and then just started kind of writing and talking film ever since. So it's all just been sort of emails. I guess occasionally we talk on the phone, but not all that often.
So you weren't even really familiar with his voice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in my head when I read the scripts, though. He just always sounds like Uncle Rolf.
That's very entertaining. Like, listeners, you know, when you see the film, you will understand why that is quite amusing. Well, having seen Attack of Demons, we certainly look forward to seeing more work from the partnership that you have found with Andreas. And
John's like it's like the Trinity, because John's got to be in the conversation.
of course, you know, having already scored your previous films, and you stated that you want him to score films going forward as well. So yeah, I wish all three of you the best of luck on whatever project you come together on next. And it just leaves me to say thank you very much, Eric, for coming on to New Horror Express.
Oh yeah, this was fun. Thanks so much for having me.
That was my guest, Eric, there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. I would also like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest edition of New Horror Express. Also, remember, if you like what you heard, the best way you can support the pod is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Plus, be sure to join us again in 2 weeks' time, when we will be talking to another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya!